The patrician waved a hand again. Rincewind saw the guards leave the chamber. Alone with the overlord of the Twin Cities, he almost wished they would come back.
"Come hither, Rincewind," said the patrician. He indicated a bowl of savouries on a low onyx table by the throne. "Would you care for a crystallized jellyfish? No?"
Said Rincewind. No.
"Now I want you to listen very carefully to what I'm about to say," said the patrician amiably. "Otherwise you will die. In an interesting fashion. Over a period. Please stop fidgeting like that. Since you are a wizard of sorts, you are, of course, aware that we live upon a world shaped, as it were, like a disc, and that there is said to exist, towards the far rim, a continent which, though small, is equal in weight to all the mighty land masses in this hemicircle. And that this, according to ancient legend, is because it is largely made of gold?"
Rincewind nodded. Who hadn't heard of the counterweight continent? Some sailors even believed the childhood tales and sailed in search of it. Of course, they returned either empty-handed or not at all, probably eaten by giant turtles, in the opinion of more serious mariners. Because, of course, the counterweight continent was nothing more than a solar myth.
"It does, of course, exist," said the patrician. "Although it is not made of gold, it is true that gold is a very common metal there. Most of the mass is made up by vast deposits of octyron deep within the crust. Now, it will be obvious to an incisive mind like yours that the existence of the counterweight continent poses a deadly threat to our people here."
He paused, looking at Rincewind's open mouth. He sighed. He said,
"Do you by some chance fail to follow me?"
Yeah,
said Rincewind. He swallowed and licked his lips.
"I mean, no. I mean, well, gold."
"I see," said the patrician sweetly. "You feel perhaps that it would be a marvellous thing to go to the counterweight continent and bring back a shipload of gold."
Rincewind had a feeling that some sort of trap was being set.
"Yes," he ventured. "And if every man on the shores of the Circle Sea had a mountain of gold of his own, would that be a good thing? What would happen? Think carefully."
Rincewind's brow furrowed. He thought,
"We'd all be rich."
The way the temperature fell at his remark told him that it was not the correct one.
"I may as well tell you, Rincewind, that there is some contact between the Lords of the Circle Sea and the Emperor of the Agatean Empire, as it is styled,"
the patrician went on.
"It is only very slight. There is little common ground between us. We have nothing they want, and they have nothing we can afford. It is an old empire, Rincewind, old and cunning and cruel, and very, very rich. So we exchange fraternal greetings by albatross mail at infrequent intervals. One such letter arrived this morning. A subject of the Emperor appears to have taken it into his head to visit our city. It appears he wishes to look at it. Only a madman would possibly undergo all the privations of crossing the Turnwise Ocean in order merely to look at anything. However, he landed this morning. He might have met a great hero, or the cunningest of thieves, or some wise and great sage. He met you. He has employed you as a guide. You will be a guide, Rincewind, to this looker, this two-flower. You will see that he returns home with a good report of our little homeland. What do you say to that?"
Thank you, Lord," said Rincewind miserably.
"There is another point, of course. It would be a tragedy should anything untoward happen to our little visitor. It would be dreadful if he were to die, for example. dreadful for the whole of our land, because the Agatian Emperor looks after his own, and could certainly extinguish us at a nod, a mere nod. And that would be dreadful for you, Rincewind, because in the weeks that remained before the Empire's huge mercenary fleet arrived, certain of my servants would occupy themselves about your person, in the hope that the avenging captains, on their arrival, might find their anger tempered by the sight of your still-living body. There are certain spells that can prevent the life departing from a body, be it never so abused, and I see by your face that understanding dawns.
Yarg.
I beg your pardon?
Yes, Lord, I'll see to it. I mean, I'll endeavour to see. I mean, well, I'll try and look after him and see he comes to no harm.
And after that I'll get a job juggling snowballs through hell, he added bitterly in the privacy of his own skull.
Capital! I gather already that you and Two Flower are on the best of terms. An excellent beginning. When he returns safely to his homeland, you will not find me ungrateful. I shall probably even dismiss the charges against you. Thank you, Rincewind, you may go.
Rincewind decided not to ask for the return of his 5 remaining Rhynu. He backed away cautiously.
Oh, and there is one other thing, the patrician said, as the wizard groped for the door handles.
Yes, Lord, he replied with a sinking heart. I'm sure you won't dream of trying to escape from your obligations by fleeing the city. I judge you to be a born city person, but you may be sure that the lords of the other cities will be apprised of these conditions by nightfall.
I assure you, the thought never even crossed my mind, Lord.
Indeed. Then if I were you, I'd sue my face for slander.
Rincewind reached the broken drum at a dead run, and was just in time to collide with a man who came out backwards fast. The stranger's haste was in part accounted for by the spear in his chest. He bubbled noisily and dropped dead at the wizard's feet. Rincewind peered around the doorframe and jerked back as a heavy throwing axe whirred past like a partridge. It was probably a lucky throw, a second cautious glance told him. The dark interior of the drum was a broil of fighting men, quite a number of them, a third and longer glance confirmed, in bits. Rincewind swayed back as a wildly thrown stool sailed past and smashed on the far side of the street. Then he dived in. He was wearing a dark robe, made darker by constant wear and irregular washings. In the raging gloom, no one appeared to notice a shadowy shape that shuffled desperately from table to table. At one point, a fighter, staggering back, trod on what felt like fingers. A number of what felt like teeth bit his ankle. He yelped shrilly and dropped his guard just sufficiently for a sword, swung by a surprised opponent, to skewer him. Rincewind reached the stairway, sucking his bruised hand and running with a curious bent-over gait. A crossbow quarrel thunked into the banister rail above him, and he gave a whimper. He made the stairs in one breathless rush, expecting at any moment another, more accurate shot. In the corridor above, he stood upright, gasping, and saw the floor in front of him scattered with bodies. A big, black-bearded man with a bloody sword in one hand was trying the door handle.
"Hey!"
screamed Rincewind. The man looked around and then, almost absent-mindedly, drew a short throwing knife from his bandolier and hurled it. Rincewind ducked. There was a brief scream behind him as the crossbow man, sighting down his weapon, dropped it and clutched at his throat. The big man was already reaching for another knife. Rincewind looked around wildly and then, with wild improvisation, drew himself up into a wizardly pose. His hand was flung back.
"Asonaitai, Kai Yorucha, Beaz Leblor."
The man hesitated, his eyes flicking nervously from side to side as he waited for the magic. The conclusion that there was not going to be any hit him at the same time as Rincewind, whirring wildly down the passage, kicked him sharply in the groin. As he screamed and clutched at himself, the wizard dragged open the door, sprang inside, slammed it behind him, and threw his body against it, panting. It was quiet in here. There was Two Flower, sleeping peacefully on the low bed, and there at the foot of the bed was the luggage. Rincewind took a few steps forward, cupidity moving him as easily as if he were on little wheels. The chest was open. There were bags inside, and in one of them he caught the gleam of gold. For a moment greed overcame caution, and he reached out gingerly. But what was the use? He'd never live to enjoy it. Reluctantly he drew his hand back, and was surprised to see a slight tremor in the chest's open lid. Hadn't it shifted slightly, as though rocked by the wind? Rincewind looked at his fingers, and then at the lid. It looked heavy, and was bound with brass bands. It was quite still now. What wind?
Rincewind!
Two Flowers sprang off the bed. The wizard jumped back, wrenching his features into a smile.
My dear chap, right on time. We'll just have lunch, and then I'm sure you've got a wonderful program lined up for this afternoon. That's great.
Rincewind took a deep breath. Look, he said desperately, let's eat somewhere else. There's been a bit of a fight down below.
A tavern brawl? Why didn't you wake me up?
Well, you see, what?
I thought I made myself clear this morning, Rincewind. I want to see genuine Morporkian life. The slave market, the whore pits, the temple of small gods, the beggar's guild, and a genuine tavern brawl.
A faint note of suspicion entered Two Flowers' voice.
You do have them, don't you? You know, people swinging on chandelier, sword fights over the table, the sort of thing Hrun the Barbarian and the Weasel are always getting involved in. You know, excitement!
Rincewind sat down heavily on the bed.
You want to see a fight, he said.
Yes! What's wrong with that?
Well, for a start, people get hurt.
Oh, I wasn't suggesting we get involved. I just want to see one, that's all. And some of your famous heroes. You do have some, don't you? It's not all dockside talk.
And now, to the wizard's astonishment, Two Flower was almost pleading.
Oh, yeah, we have them all right, said Rincewind hurriedly.
He pictured them in his mind, and recoiled from the thought. All the heroes of the Circle Sea passed through the gates of Ankh Morpork sooner or later. Most of them were from the barbaric tribes near the Frozen Hub, which had a sort of export trade in heroes. Almost all of them had crude magic swords, whose unsuppressed harmonics on the astral plane played hell with any delicate experiments in applied sorcery for miles around. But Rincewind didn't object to them on that score. He knew himself to be a magical dropout, so it didn't bother him that the mere appearance of a hero at the city gates was enough to cause retorts to explode and demons to materialize all through the magical quarter. No, what he didn't like about heroes was that they were usually suicidally gloomy when sober and homicidally insane when drunk. There were too many of them, too. Some of the most notable questing grounds near the city were a veritable hubbub in the season. There was talk of organizing a rota. He rubbed his nose. The only heroes he had much time for were Bravd and the Weasel, who were out of town at the moment, and Hrun the Barbarian, who was practically an academic by Hub standards in that he could think without moving his lips. Hrun was said to be roving somewhere turnwise.
Look, he said at last, have you ever met a barbarian?
Two Flowers shook his head.
I was afraid of that, said Rincewind. Well,
There was a clatter of running feet in the street outside, and a fresh uproar from downstairs. It was followed by a commotion on the stairs. The door was flung open before Rincewind could collect himself sufficiently to make a dash for the window. But instead of the greed-crazed madman he expected, he found himself looking into the round, red face of a sergeant of the watch. He breathed again. Of course. The watch were always careful not to intervene too soon in any brawl where the odds were not heavily stacked in their favour. The job carried a pension, and attracted a cautious, thoughtful kind of man. The sergeant glowered at Rincewind, and then peered at Two Flower with interest.
"Everything all right here, then?" he said. "Oh, fine," said Rincewind. "Got held up, did you?"
The sergeant ignored him.
"This the foreigner, then?" he inquired. "We were just leaving," said Rincewind quickly, and switched to Trob.
Two Flower, I think we ought to get lunch somewhere else. I know some places. He marched out into the corridor with as much aplomb as he could muster. Twoflower followed, and a few seconds later there was a strangling sound from the sergeant as the luggage closed its lid with a snap, stood up, stretched, and marched after them. Watchmen were dragging bodies out of the room downstairs. There were no survivors. The watch had ensured this by giving them ample time to escape via the back door, a neat compromise between caution and justice that benefited all parties.
"Who were all these men?"
said Twoflower.
Just men,"
said Rincewind, and before he could stop himself, some part of his brain that had nothing to do took control of his mouth and added, "Heroes, in fact."
"Really?"
When one foot is stuck in the grey miasma of Hrull, it is much easier to step right in and sink rather than prolong the struggle. Rincewind let himself go.
"Yes, that one over there is Eric Strong in the Arm. Over there is Black Zenel."
"Is Hrun the Barbarian here?" said Twoflower, looking around eagerly.
Rincewind took a deep breath.
"That's him behind us," he said.
The enormity of this lie was so great that its ripples did in fact spread out of one of the lower astral planes as far as the magical quarter across the river, where it picked up tremendous velocity from the huge standing wave of power that always hovered there and bounced wildly across the Circle Sea. A harmonic got as far as Hrun himself, currently fighting a couple of gnolls on a crumbling ledge high in the Cadarac Mountains, and caused him a moment's unexplained discomfort. Twoflower, meanwhile, had thrown back the lid of the luggage and was hastily pulling out a heavy black cube.
"This is fantastic," he said. "They're never going to believe this at home."
"What's he going on about?" said the sergeant doubtfully.
"He's pleased you rescued us," said Rincewind. He looked sidelong at the black box, half expecting it to explode or emit strange musical tones.
"Oh,"
said the sergeant. He was staring at the box too. Twoflower smiled brightly at them.
"I'd like a record of the event," he said. "Do you think you could ask them all to stand over by the window, please? This won't take a moment. And, Rincewind?"
"Yes?"
Twoflower stood on tiptoe to whisper.
"I expect you know what this is, don't you?"
Rincewind stared down at the box. It had a round glass eye protruding from the centre at one face and a lever at the back.
"Not wholly," he said.
"It's a device for making pictures quickly," said Twoflower. "Quite a new invention. I'm rather proud of it. But, look, I don't think these gentlemen would... Well, I mean, they might be sort of apprehensive. Could you explain it to them? I'll reimburse them for their time, of course."
"He's got a box with a demon in it that draws pictures," said Rincewind shortly. "Do what the madman says, and he will give you gold." The watch smiled nervously.
"I'd like you in the picture, Rincewind. That's fine."
Twoflower took out the golden disc that Rincewind had noticed before, squinted at its unseen face for a moment, muttered,
30 seconds should about do it,"
and said brightly,
"Smile, please."
"Smile," rasped Rincewind. There was a whir from the box.
"Right."
High above the disc, the second albatross soared. So high, in fact, that its tiny, mad orange eyes could see the whole of the world and the great, glittering, girdling Circle Sea. There was a yellow message capsule strapped to one leg. Far below it, unseen in the clouds, the bird that had brought the earlier message to the patrician of Ankh-Morpork flapped gently back to its home. Rincewind looked at the tiny square of glass in astonishment. There he was, all right. A tiny figure, in perfect colour, standing in front of a group of watchmen whose faces were each frozen in a terrified rictus. A buzz of wordless terror went up from the men around him as they craned over his shoulder to look. Grinning, Twoflower produced a handful of the smaller coins Rincewind now recognised as quarter Rhynhu. He winked at the wizard.
"I had similar problems when I stopped over in the Brown Islands," he said. "They thought the iconograph steals a bit of their souls. Laughable, isn't it?"
"Yeah,"
said Rincewind, and then, because somehow that was hardly enough to keep up his side of the conversation, added,
"I don't think it looks very like me, though."
"It's easy to operate," said Twoflower, ignoring him. "Look, all you have to do is press this button. The iconograph does the rest. Now, I'll just stand over there next to Hrun, and you can take the picture."
The coins quietened the men's agitation in the way that gold can, and Rincewind was amazed to find, half a minute later, that he was holding a little glass portrait of Twoflower, wielding a huge notched sword, and smiling as though all his dreams had come true. They lunched at a small eating house near the brass bridge, with the luggage nestling under the table. The food and wine, both far superior to Rincewind's normal fare, did much to relax him. Things weren't going to be too bad, he decided. A bit of invention and some quick thinking, that was all that was needed. Twoflower seemed to be thinking too. Looking reflectively into his wine cup, he said, "Tavern fights are pretty common around here, I expect."
Fairly.
No doubt fixtures and fittings get damaged.
Fixtures? Oh, I see. You mean like benches and whatnot? Yes, I suppose so.
That must be upsetting for the innkeepers.
I've never really thought about it. I suppose it must just be one of the risks of the job.
Twoflower regarded him thoughtfully. I might be able to help there, he said. Risks are my business. I say, this food is a bit greasy, isn't it?
You did say you wanted to try some typical more Porkian food, said Rincewind. What was that about risks?
Oh, I know all about risks. They're my business.
I thought that's what you said. I didn't believe it the first time either.
Oh, I don't take risks. About the most exciting thing that happened to me was knocking some ink over. I assess risks.
Day after day.
Do you know what the odds are against a house catching fire in the Red Triangle district of Best Pelagic? 538 to 1. I calculated that, he added with a trace of pride.
What?
Rincewind tried to suppress a burp.
What for? Excuse me.
He helped himself to some more wine. Twoflower paused. I can't say it in Trob, he said. I don't think the Betrobby have a word for it. In my language we call it... He said a collection of outlandish syllables.
In-sewer-ants, repeated Rincewind. That's a funny word. What does it mean?
Well, suppose you have a ship loaded with, say, gold bars. It might run into storms or be taken by pirates. You don't want that to happen, so you take out an insurance policy. I work out the odds against the cargo being lost based on weather reports and piracy records for the last 20 years. Then I add a bit, then you pay me some money based on those odds.
And the bit...
Rincewind said, waggling a finger solemnly. And then, if the cargo is lost, I reimburse you.
Reimburse?
Pay you the value of your cargo, said Twoflower patiently.
I get it. It's like a bet, right?
A wager. In a way, I suppose.
And you make money at this insurance?
It offers a return on investment, certainly.
Wrapped in the warm yellow glow of the wine, Rincewind tried to think of insurance in Circle Sea terms.
I don't think I understand this insurance, he said firmly, idly watching the world spin by. Magic, now. Magic, I understand.
Twoflower grinned. Magic is one thing, and reflected sound of underground spirits is another, he said.
What?
What?
That funny word you used, said Rincewind impatiently.
Reflected sound of underground spirits?
Never heard of it.
Twoflower tried to explain. Rincewind tried to understand.